vomited up the pink wafers. Raymond knocked gently on the door, but I shouted at him to leave me alone. When I came back, both he and the cat were sitting separately on the sofa. I sat down in the chair opposite, and they both watched me carefully.
"Who would do such a thing, Raymond?" I said, when I could finally speak.
Both he and the cat looked sad.
"Sick fucks," said Raymond, shaking his head. "Daisy brought her in and we made sure she was okay. He's allergic though, so we can't keep her. I was going to take her to the cat's protection or see if my mum wanted another one, but then, I don't know, I thought she might be a nice bit of company for you, Eleanor. Just say if not, it's a big deal having a pet, a lot of responsibility."
This was tricky. On the one hand, I could not deny that I was drawn to her. She had an undeniably rakish, alopecia-based charm and a devil-may-care attitude that would melt the hardest of hearts. I could tell that she was a cat that brooked no nonsense. She was, at the same time, a vulnerable creature, one which needed looking after. Therein lay the rub. Was I up to the task? I thought back to the counselling sessions, how we'd talked about thinking things through rationally, recognising unhelpful patterns of behaviour and being brave enough to try doing things differently. "Come on, Eleanor," I said to myself, "be brave. This is not the same as before, not even close to it. She's a cat and you're a grown woman. You're more than capable of doing this." "I will assume the mantle of care, Raymond," I said firmly. "This creature will be looked after assiduously." He smiled.
"I'm sure she will be. She thinks at home here already, right enough," he said.
The cat was now sprawled across the sofa cushions, to all intents and purposes asleep, although one ear twitched intermittently as she monitored the conversation.
"What are you going to call her?" he said.
I put my head on one side while I considered this. After a while, Raymond stood up.
"I'm going to nip downstairs for a fag. I'll leave the door on the latch," he said.
"Don't blow the smoke towards my windows," I shouted after him. When he came back 10 minutes later, I told him that her name was Glen. He laughed.
"Glen? What's a boy's name, surely?"
I thought about all of those red labels, all those empty bottles. "She's named after an old friend," I said. The next day, I woke with a start to find Glen lying beside me, her head on the pillow and her body under the covers, just like a human. Her huge green eyes were staring intently at me as though she had willed me awake. She followed me into the kitchen and I gave her some water, which she ignored, and some kibble, which she bolted down and promptly vomited back up onto the kitchen floor. I turned away to get some cleaning materials from under the sink, but when I looked around, she was eating her sick back up again. "Good girl, Glen," I said. "Low maintenance." Raymond had only brought the bare minimum for her to spend the night, so while she was snoozing on top of the duvet, I snuck out of the flat and took the bus to the retail park, where I knew there was a big pet supplies store. I bought her a bigger, comfier bed, a proper litter tray with a covered roof for privacy, 4 different kinds of wet and dry food, and a sack of organic cat litter. I picked up a bottle of oil that was supposed to be good for her coat. A teaspoon was to be mixed in with her food every day. I didn't care if her coat grew back or not because she was fine just as she was, but I felt that she might be more comfortable without the bare patches of skin. She didn't strike me as the type to enjoy playing with toys, but just in case, I bought a glittery ball and a huge fluffy mouse the size of an old man's slipper, which was stuffed with catnip. When I took the trolley to the till, I realised that I was going to have to call a taxi to get it all home. I felt quite proud of myself. The driver wouldn't help me carry it upstairs, so it took me a few trips, and I was sweating by the time I got everything indoors. The expedition had taken over 2 hours from start to finish. Glen was still asleep on the duvet. I spent the day pottering around the flat. Glen was good company. Quiet, self-contained, mostly asleep. That evening, as I sat with a cup of tea and listened to a play on the radio, she jumped onto my lap and began kneading my thighs with her paws, claws partially unsheathed. It was slightly uncomfortable, but I could tell that she meant it kindly. After doing that for a minute or so, she settled herself carefully onto my lap and went to sleep. I needed to go to the bathroom about 20 minutes later, a necessity exacerbated by the fact that she was far from slender and was lounging with her full body weight directly atop my bladder. I tried to gently shift her to one side. She resisted. I tried again. On the third attempt, she got to her feet slowly, arched her back, and then shuddered out a long, judgmental sigh before dropping down onto the floor and waddling off towards her new bed. Once ensconced there, she glared at me as I left the room, maintaining the expression when I returned and continued to glower at me throughout the evening. I wasn't worried. I dealt with far, far worse things than an irritated feline. Raymond paid a visit again, a few days later, to see how Glenn was settling in. I'd invited him and his mother, as he'd mentioned that she was keen, and as a cat obsessive, I imagined she'd enjoy meeting Glenn. In any case, there were still plenty of biscuits left over from his previous visit, so it was not as though it was any trouble. They arrived in a black cab, which Mrs. Gibbons was very pleased about.
"The driver was lovely, Eleanor, wasn't he, Raymond?" she said.
Raymond nodded, and I thought I detected a hint, just a tiny one, of weariness, as though it wasn't the first time she'd gone over the topic during their short journey from the south to the west of the city.
"Oh, he couldn't have been nicer. Helped me in and out of the taxi, held the door open while I got my walking frame."
"That's right, Mum," he said, tucking her walking frame into the corner of the living room while she settled herself on the sofa. Glenn, ever their iconoclast, had immediately gone to bed, my bed, as soon as they arrived, and there was nothing to see of her but a lightly snoring lump under the duvet. Mrs. Gibbons was disappointed, but I left her to peruse some photos on my phone while I went to make tea. Raymond joined me in the kitchen, leaning against the worktop while he watched me pour. He placed a carrier bag next to me.
"There's nothing much," he said.
I peered inside. There was a white cardboard box from a bakery, tied with ribbon. There was also a tiny tin of gourmet cat food.
"How lovely," I said, delighted.
"I wasn't sure what you liked. Didn't want to come empty-handed," Raymond said, blushing. "I thought, well, you seem like the kind of person who likes nice things," he said, looking up at me. "You deserve to have nice things," he said firmly.
This was strange. I must confess I was somewhat lost for words for a moment or two. Did I deserve nice things? "It's funny, you know, Raymond," I said. "Growing up with Mummy was very disorientating. Sometimes she gave us nice things, other times not. I mean, one week we'd be dipping quail's eggs in celery salt and shucking oysters. The next we'd be starving. I mean, you know, literally deprived of food and water," I said. His eyes widened. "Everything was always extreme, so extreme with her," I said, nodding to myself. "I used to long for normal, you know, 3 meals a day, ordinary stuff. Tomato soup, mashed potatoes, cornflakes." I untied the ribbons and looked inside the box. The sponge cake inside was an artful confection, chocolate ganache scattered with bright raspberry jewels. It was an ordinary luxury, which Raymond had chosen especially for me. "Thank you," I said, feeling tears threaten to well up. There was really nothing else I needed to say.
"Thanks for inviting us, Eleanor," he said. "Mum loves to get out, but she doesn't often get the chance."
"You're welcome any time, both of you are," I said, and I meant it. I set the cake on a tray with the tea things, but before I could pick it up, Raymond did the honours. I followed behind. He had had his hair cut, I noticed.
"How are you feeling, Eleanor?" Mrs. Gibbons asked once we were all settled. "Raymond mentioned that you'd been a bit under the weather recently."
She wore an expression of mild, polite concern, nothing more, and I realised, flushed with gratitude, that he hadn't provided her with any details. "I'm feeling much better, thank you," I said. Raymond's been keeping an eye on me. I'm very lucky.
He looked surprised. His mother did not.
He's got a heart of gold, my boy, she said, nodding.
Raymond's face looked like Glenn's did the time she noticed that I'd seen her trying and failing to jump from the sofa to the windowsill. I laughed.
We're embarrassing you, I said. Oh, you're embarrassing you, he said, rabbiting away about nothing like a proper pair of old biddies. Anyone want some more tea?
He reached forward for the teapot and I saw he was smiling. The Gibbons were easy, pleasant company. We were all slightly surprised at how quickly time had passed when the pre-booked taxi honked its horn in irritation an hour later, I think, and their departure was, by necessity, somewhat rushed.
Your turn to come to me next time, Eleanor, she said, as they struggled out of the door with the walking frame,
Raymond shrugging on his jacket at the same time. I nodded. She kissed me quickly on the cheek, the scarred one, and I didn't even flinch.
Come again with Raymond one Sunday. Have your tea. Stay for a while, she whispered.
I nodded again. Raymond lumbered past me, then, before I could do anything about it, leaned in and kissed me on the cheek like his mother had done.
See you at work, he said, and he was off,
manhandling both her and her wheels down the stairs in a very precarious fashion. I put my hand to my face. They were quite a kissy family, the Gibbons. Some families were like that. I washed up the cups and plates, at which point Glenn finally decided to make an appearance. That wasn't very sociable, Glenn, I said. She stared up at me and let out a short sound, not really a meow, more of a chirp, strangely. The import, namely that she didn't give a fig, was abundantly clear. I spooned the special cat food that Raymond had brought into her bowl. This was met with considerable enthusiasm, although regretfully her table manners were sadly reminiscent of her benefactors. Raymond had left his tabloid newspaper behind on the chair in the living room. Unfortunately, he often carried one rolled up in his back pocket. I leafed through it, just in case it had a halfway decent crossword, and stopped at page 9, my eyes drawn to the headline.
Glasgow Evening Times. Entertainment news. Pilgrim pioneers discover America. Glasgow band tipped to be bigger than Biffy. Scottish band Pilgrim Pioneers are celebrating this week after reaching number 5 in the American Billboard Top 100. The Glasgow-based four-piece looks set to crack the lucrative US market after years of gigging locally in pubs and clubs. Their single, Don't Miss You, written after the acrimonious departure of their previous frontman, was picked up last month by an industry insider via YouTube. Since then, it's been broadcast nightly across the USA as the soundtrack to a big-budget advert for a telecoms company. The band are set to head stateside next month on a coast-to-coast tour. Reading this, I was taken straight back to another place, another person. The person I was trying to be and the changes I was trying and failing to make to myself and in my life. The singer wasn't ever the point, really. Maria Temple had helped me see that. In my eagerness to change, to connect with someone, I'd focused on the wrong thing, the wrong person. On the charge of being a catastrophic disaster, a failed human being, I was starting to find myself, with Maria's help, not guilty. The story didn't mention what Johnny Lomond was doing now. It really didn't matter. I folded up the newspaper. I could line Glenn's litter tray with it later. At Johnny L. Rock's, 7 hours.
Massive congrats to the guys. Great news and really, really well deserved. So chuffed for them. Hashtag USA. Hashtag big time. No likes.
At Johnny L. Rock's, 44 minutes. Fuck. Fuck, fuck, fuckity, fuck, fuck.
Later deleted. Chapter 33. Maria seemed in a good mood when I arrived at her office, and I was too. It was an effort to switch my brain to alert mode when she started talking about the past again. We haven't spoken much about the fire.
I wonder, are you happy to talk a bit about it?
I nodded warily.
Good. Now, can you try closing your eyes for me, please, Eleanor? Sometimes it's easier to access memories that way. Take a deep breath in and then let it all out. Great. And another. Good. Now, I want you to think back. You're at home and it's the day before the fire. What do you remember? Anything? Take your time. I'd been feeling so light and free earlier, so centred in myself that I hadn't had a chance to prepare myself properly for this. As I closed my eyes and exhaled to Maria's count, I had the worrying realisation that before I was even properly aware of it, my brain was off accessing memories and places I didn't want it to go, scurrying into rooms before I'd had a chance to block them off. My body felt heavy, in contrast to my mind, which floated balloon-like just beyond my reach. Now that it was happening, though, I accepted it with equanimity. There was a certain pleasure in ceding control. Mummy. She's angry. Mummy was sleeping, but we've woken her up again. Mummy's had enough of us now. I feel tears on my cheeks as I relate this, but I don't feel particularly sad. It's as though I'm describing a film. That's great, Eleanor, you're doing really well, Maria said. Can you tell me more about Mummy? My voice is tiny.
I don't want to, I say.
You're doing great, Eleanor. Let's try to keep going. So about Mummy? I said nothing for the longest time, allowing my mind to wander where it needed to go in that house, letting the memories out like trapped birds. Finally, I whispered two words.
Where's Marianne?
Chapter 34. Sunday. I had to leave the house at 12 to meet Raymond for lunch. Glenn was dozing in her new bed and I used the camera function on my mobile telephone to take some more shots of her. In the final picture, she had one paw covering her eyes as if to block out the light. I knelt down on the floor beside her and buried my face in the biggest patch of fur. She wriggled slightly, then increased the volume of her purring. I kissed the softness on the top of her head. See you later, Glenn, I said. I won't be long. She appeared blissfully untroubled by my imminent departure. When I was ready to leave, I opened the door as quietly as I could and tiptoed into the living room to check if she was still asleep. I found her on top of the giant catnip-stuffed mouse, both she and the rodent facing me, its glazed button eyes staring straight ahead. She had her front paws thrown over its mousy shoulders and was lazily kneading them while she humped it energetically from behind. I left them to it. Ever since the session, all I could think about was Marianne. Marianne, Marianne, Marianne. I turned the name over and over in my mind like a coin between my fingers. Dr. Temple had asked me to prepare myself to talk about her again in our next session. I wasn't sure how I felt about that. Is knowing always better than not knowing? Discuss. Raymond, untroubled by philosophical questions, was already there when I arrived at the Black Dog, reading the Sunday Mail and sipping a pint. Sorry I'm late, I said. His face was paler than usual, and when he stood up to hug me, I could smell old as well as new beer, in addition to the usual reek of cigarettes.
How's it going?
He said, his voice sounding scratchy.
Well, how are you? I said. He didn't look well.
He groaned.
I nearly texted you to cancel, to be honest, he said. I had a bit of a late one last night.
Did you and Laura go on a date? I said. He boggled at me.
How on earth do you know that?
He asked, sounding incredulous. I remembered something I'd seen Billy do in the office and tapped the side of my nose with my index finger knowingly. He laughed.
I think you might have a bit of witch in you, Eleanor, he said.
I shrugged. I even had a black cat now to prove it. I bumped into Laura a while back, actually, I explained. She told me you were seeing each other.
He took a big gulp of his pint.